I'm Callie Crossley, and this is an encore segment of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. We call this part of the show Lagniappe. That's Creole for something extra.
In 1847, a man had a dream. He made the first American candy machine. His candy was next to perfection. Yes, Necco was an immaculate confection.
That's Nate Gibson singing his song, An Immaculate Confection, his lyrical tribute to the Necco candy wafer. Necco, or the New England Confectionery Company, was the oldest candy company in the United States at the time of its closure in 2018. Based here in Revere, Massachusetts, they manufactured national favorites like Clark Bars, Candy Buttons, Sky Bars, and Sweethearts. But their bestseller was without a doubt the Necco wafers. Necco played an historic role in the world of American candy, with their wafers dating back to 1847. The company was sold a handful of years ago to the Ohio-based production company, Spangler Candy Company. But how did this shift impact the candy manufacturing world? We talked everything from favorite sweet treats to the future of the candy production industry last year with Darlene Lacey, an author and curator of the Candy Wrapper Museum. Welcome, Darlene.
Thank you for having me on the show, Callie. It's great to be here. And boy, that was a cool song.
Isn't it a cool one? I happen to be, I know it's controversial, I love Necco wafers, particularly the licorice one. So first question, of course, do you like Necco wafers?
I love Necco wafers. And the licorice ones are my favorite. I don't care what anybody says.
Exactly. That's how I feel as well. So your book, the Necco, the Archive Collection and Almost Lost History of the New England Confectionery Company, is 254-page catalog of showcasing classic package designs and ephemera from 1881 to 2018. Give us a few examples of what's included in the book.
Oh gosh, there are so many items in there that I believe have not seen the light of day for 70 years or more. I received this scrapbook archive that was rescued from the dumpsters at Necco when they moved from Cambridge to Revere, that were these meticulously annotated examples of all their packaging from the 1950s. And a lot of that appears in the book. That's sort of the core or the heart of the catalog. But also, I received all kinds of old wrappers from the 1920s, the 1910s, when Necco was still in South Boston, and also photographs and other ephemera, advertising ephemera from the family of brands, like old photos of Miss Mary Jane. They used to have Mary Janes that would go to the drugstores and grocery stores, which was a surprise to me. And also just really great old artist comps and original wrappers of the Necco wafers. You get to see all kinds of different designs for the Necco wafers that I don't think anyone really remembers or knew ever existed. So we cover all kinds of content, including the wafers, Canada mints, bolster bars, squirrel nut zippers, you name it, they're in there.
Now, just to be clear, what you said, there was a different design for Necco's earlier. Were they at one time not wafers?
They were always wafers, but interestingly, Necco marketed them in a number of ways when they first started out at the turn of the 20th century. You know, they weren't really sure, I guess, how to position them, or maybe they just felt that there were many ways that you could. But as you'll see in the book, in the early times, they focused them on being the perfect treat for hostesses at afternoon teas. They had them, you know, described as a fairy feast in a garden of delights, you know, very delicate, very romantic. And then as time went on, they started to skew them a little bit more towards kids, and then later into the nostalgia market. And so you have these very beautiful, ornate Necco wafers ads, as well as beautiful examples of their early packaging. So they really changed a lot. And it wasn't until the 1960s when they started advertising with this sort of child outlaw character, the Necco Kid, that they depicted Necco wafers, as many of us think of them, as candy poker chips.
Now, we should say that you also wrote Necco, An Epic Candy Tale. So Necco, the archive collection, is a companion piece to that. Is that why, as you mentioned, the scrapbook, which had a lot of this stuff that you'd not even seen, came into your hands, that people knew of your interest in Necco and got it to you?
Yes. Well, really, how it all came about was, as you mentioned previously, I'm the curator of the Candy Wrapper Museum, which is basically my collection of candy wrappers that I started when I was a teenager. And I always thought of it as a museum that I would share with the world, not just a collection. And so I have a lot of the museum up online. And this led one of Necco's former vice presidents, vice president of research and development, to think of me, to send some of the ephemera that he had collected over the years, and also again when Necco made their big move and they had to clear out a lot of stuff. So when I received the scrapbook, this was really the awakening for me to realize how big Necco's history was. And I thought, okay, I have to share this with the world. It's a little too big to put just on a website, and certainly way too big for social media. So I set about with my husband, Joe, to restore and digitize and clean up everything. And in that process, I thought, well, I'll write this simple history of Necco to set the stage for it. And as I dove into Necco's history, granted, it's 171 years, so I should not have been surprised. But the more I did my research, the more history I found. And it was just so fascinating and so rich. And it was at that time I learned that so many other Boston and Cambridge confectionery companies were all part of it, became part of Necco as the years went on. And I felt that I needed to do justice to the histories of everyone that came together to become part of Necco. And as I worked on this history, I wound up with well over 1,000 sources that I synthesized for my research. And the history just got bigger and bigger. And it got so large that I thought, well, I need two books. I need the history book. Okay. And I need the companion piece that really is all the big, beautiful, digitized and restored images of the Necco ephemera.
Let's put a pause on the Necco story to just for a moment jog over to your story. What in the world made you start collecting candy wrappers?
You know, it's a fairly commonplace thing today, but back in the day, I thought I was the only person in the world doing it. And people thought it was really kind of bizarre, right? But when I was a teenage girl, I didn't have an allowance, and I had these friends that had collections, and I thought, oh, I would love to collect something, but really the only thing that I purchase regularly is candy because I had a sweet tooth. And so I got this idea that I would just go down to the 7-Eleven like I normally would. But in this case, I would look for any kind of candy wrappers or packaging that I felt had either some sort of artistic merit, was funny or humorous in some way, or it was something ephemeral that probably wouldn't last long on the shelves. And I thought these would be great things to collect and just share over time. And my original vision was in my old age to basically set up a roadside attraction where I would have the Candy Wrapper Museum. But as I got older and the internet came to be, I thought, wow, this already is really the ultimate roadside out here. Let me just put part of my collection up online and see how that goes. And I was really overwhelmed by the positive reaction to it. It just immediately received thousands of visitors. It got written up in the press. People were saying, well, now this world has just come too far where we have a candy wrapper museum.
If it makes you happy.
I was validated.
Yes, exactly. I'm just fascinated that you, for all of the wrappers you have in your museum, And you can tell us how big that is, how much you estimate, because from the pictures, it looks like I can't even calculate. You ate every bit of the candy before you kept the wrapper. That's what I think is interesting. So you're a true researcher.
Yes, I am. You have to taste the candy, right? Before you can really talk about the wrapper. And so, yeah, you know, and I must say, I can't say that I enjoyed each and every piece of it. So,
but you ate it, so it's good. All right, now back to Necco and the Necco wafers. First of all, as you talked about before, having all these other candy companies come under the umbrella, is that why then Necco was making all these different kinds of candies at one point, because they sort of acquired or brought under the umbrella of the New England Confectionery Company other makers of different candies?
Yeah, I would say that's a lot of it. But also, just to give a little historical reference, Necco was the result of an amalgamation of three rather large companies to begin with. When it formed in 1901, you had Chase & Company, Wright & Moody, and Phobes Hayward & Company, which aren't necessarily familiar names today, but Chase & Company, which began in 1847, basically gave birth to the American candy industry, with Oliver Chase creating the first candy machine. All three companies were making different things, chocolates and these lozenges and other kinds of confections. And so when they came together in 1901 under the brand name Necco Sweets, they were already selling 500 different kinds of confections. And then over the years, they continued to acquire other brands, or in some case, licensing. And because of that, they just had this juggernaut, which I was not aware of at the time. But one of the features in An Epic Candy Tale is a candy list that I put together throughout my research to just count up how many Necco brand candies I could find during the course of my research. And I wound up with 1,380, which by no means is the complete list, but I feel like I've gotten very close to it.
I'm Callie Crossley, and you're listening to an encore segment of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Last year, I talked to Darlene Lacey, curator of the Candy Wrapper Museum and author of Necco, An Epic Candy Tale. We talked about all things candy and Necco. Just so people get a sense of the variety of Necco, the New England Confectionery Company, here's more of Nate Gibson's song, An Immaculate Confection, listing out the treats Necco is famous for.
Revere is the home of the factory of the New England Confectionery Company. And they're still making billions of sweets, like the Sky Bar and the Squirrel Nut Zippers and the Mary Jane Peanut Butter Molasses Chews and the Candy Buttons and the Clark Bar and the Canada Mints and the Sweethearts Conversation Hearts with the cute little phrases like love you, true love, fax me, email me, and of course those American classics, that free wafer treat.
You got a lot of them in. I love that song. But what Necco was known for folks like me who, you know, we're not Squirrel Nut Zippers people, we're really those wafers. And as we began this conversation, we talk about how controversial they were. But let's take a listen to a clip from The Phantom Gourmet. This is a television show here in Boston that visits various restaurants and looks into foodstuffs. And they did a visit to the factory back in 2013 to have someone there describe how the Necco wafers are made.
We mix it all together in a giant mixer. It mixes it together and it comes out in 900-pound batches. And we dump them into bins, and from there, the bins get moved over to our wafer cutters. And we have people who manually take chunks of the wafers and throw them up into a hopper. And we've got someone called a feeder who feeds the paste down onto the machine, and each wafer gets individually cut. They get punched down into individual wafers, and they go for a ride on a 30-foot long dryer. It takes about 45 minutes, and then they come out the end. They're not quite ready to eat yet. Then they get stacked up in trays for 24 hours, and then they're ready for rolling.
there's even more to it than that, but we thought that was the heart of it. I enjoyed that so much. I wanted to play that clip for another reason, because the factory closed. There was a big, you know, heartfelt loss here, even for people who didn't like the Necco wafers themselves. And the company closed in 2018. They moved from where they had been to Cambridge, and then they closed. And for a while, there was much discussion, Darlene, about there never being any more Necco wafers, or for that matter, some of the other candies. But then the Spangler candy company picked it up. Talk about the emotional tie to Necco wafers that I know you know about from having written so much about the company and those wafers.
It was a really big deal. I remember when it hit the news, and of course, everyone's emailing and calling me and asking what's going on. And I'll have to admit, I was in a bit of denial at the time, because that, you know, there was a lot of on again, off again negotiations where it looked like Necco was going to be saved, and then Necco wasn't saved. And so people were rushing out and purchasing all kinds of Necco candies. I have some friends that still have a stash of them from that time for a rainy day. And fortunately, Spangler saved so much of it. But that's one of the chapters that I have at the end of An Epic Candy Tale. I have this really great section called Necco Now and Then, in which we show photographs of the old Necco factories and the buildings today and yesterday, along with quotes from people whose lives were touched by Necco or have these sweet memories of Necco. And a lot of these memories center around how people felt when they heard the news about Necco closing. And there was just such a sadness, because this was a great American company. It was an institution. The Necco wafers was a candy that, you know, has been hypothesized to be probably the most, you know, single candy that has been consumed around the world by people, because it was sold for so long and they sold so many millions of rolls of Necco wafers. And so it just really felt like a big piece of America and the candy industry was gone for good, which it was. And even though most of the family of brands has been brought back, which has been really wonderful and very fortunate, it's still just very sad to know that Necco is no more, because they really gave it a great run.
Now, let me ask about Necco's influence as an innovator. You talked a little bit about how they came together and instituted some ways of manufacturing that were different. But just in general, is there an influence in the candy industry itself that came from, you know, how the company operated, or how they made their candy or envisioned their candy?
I think there was. I look at Necco's history, and one of the things that I noticed throughout the decades was how Necco never just, they didn't sit on their laurels in terms of saying, well, we invented this, we have this much production going. They were always in the lens of let's keep improving. They were always looking to improve their processes. And I think they were really a leader in that regard. And, you know, one of the things that really should be mentioned, even though it was early on, going back to Chase and Company and the Chase brothers, although Oliver Chase invented the first candy machine for America, his brother Daniel said, wait a minute, we could take this one step further. What if we printed little love notes on the candy and came up with the invention of conversation hearts, or conversation candies as they were called at the time, because they weren't just hearts. There were all kinds of whimsical shapes and all kinds of different sayings on them. They were very, very creative. And, you know, so many companies copied that and, you know, took inspiration from them. But then another great innovation of Necco's was the Sky Bar, where they called it the candy box in a bar, because it had the four chambers and one with different fillings inside it. And this was something that, from what I read, there was a candy bar kind of like that in Europe. I was never able to really find out what it was or what happened to it, But the engineers at Necco, they saw the potential of this candy bar. So they bought the recipe, brought it back to New England, and then worked on their own machinery to find a way to perfect it and mass produce it. And to this day, it's one of the most difficult candy bars to make. And so that's why you don't see it often replicated. And so they were always pushing the envelope when it came to the manufacturing at Necco.
Do you think that the Spangler manufactured Necco wafers or any of the other candies taste the same?
Very similar, but a little different is what I noticed. Actually, I have quite a few vintage Necco wafers here in the house and Conversation Hearts, and I don't really want to eat them, but I have taken some of the Necco wafers that were a little more recent before Necco went out of business, and I've compared them to the Spangler, and I can tell you that the Spangler Necco wafers, they taste basically the same, but they are a little crispier and a little thinner.
Interesting. Huh. I wonder if that's deliberate or is that just what happened when they decided to make it. It's interesting. Aside from the innovation, the emotional feeling that people had for Necco here in New England. I mean, there is a lot of sort of cultural legacy from the company. I didn't know until preparing to talk to you that in Traces Park, which I'm told is a short walk from Central Square in Cambridge, there is a Necco wafer sculpture. I'm going to go look for it one day, but I didn't know that. Did you?
Yes, I found that just really fairly recently as well. And it's really charming. You need to go check that out. But yeah, there's all kinds of traces of Necco that just still are in the neighborhoods. And if you look around, and of course, in people's hearts, you know, one of the things about Necco was that they were one of the first U.S. companies to really give benefits like life insurance to the employees and pensions. And they had great loyalty with their workforce there. And generations of workers of these families worked side by side there. And so you had these long family histories with people who worked at Necco. And so that was one of the heartbreaking things when Necco closed its doors, because so many families had poured so much of their hearts and their lives into making the candies, and there was so much pride. And one of the things that I've heard that I guess we'll never have a chance to experience was just the incredible taste of the candies as they rolled off the assembly lines. And there was just nothing like it to just pluck a fresh piece of candy off the line and taste it. So I don't know when the day will come when people, especially in the Cambridge and Boston Revere area, won't remember Necco. I don't know if it'll ever happen, but it has certainly left a lasting footprint in the region. And I think across the country, I know so many people were such fans of Necco candies.
So Darlene Lacey, founder of the Candy Wrapper Museum, so you've eaten a lot of candy. What is, for you, the legacy of Necco and specifically the Necco wafer?
I think it goes back to, it might sound a little corny, but simpler times and just simplicity of enjoying these types of old-fashioned penny candies, where I know I think of it from my own childhood. Some people, you know, would use them as communion wafers, I'm sure you've heard, and checkers, and you could play with them like coins. And there was just this really kind of innocence to this candy. One of the things about the Necco wafers was that it was a roll that you could share. And so many family members, you would share the candy. Sometimes somebody would be, oh, I want just the chocolate ones, or I'll trade you these for those. And there was just this great bringing together with the candy that I just don't think you have it anymore. I feel like there's been something lost in terms of just the simple sentimental feeling of candy back in the day.
Well, thank you so much for joining me with this sweet conversation.
Thank you, Callie.
Darlene Lacey is an author and curator of the Candy Wrapper Museum. Her most recent books are Necco, An Epic Candy Tale, and Necco, The Archive Collection, An Almost Lost History of the New England Confectionery Company. That's it for this edition of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Listen to us online at GBH News or wherever you get your podcasts. And follow us on Twitter and Facebook to stay up to date with our programming. Under the Radar with Callie Crossley is a production of GBH, produced by Jesse Steinmetz and Hannah Ubeley, with help from Eli Chavez, and engineered by Dave Goodman. Our intern is Jenny Firm. Our theme music is Fish and Chips by We Are Two Saxies, Grace Kelly and Leo P. Listen again on Thursday and see you here at 6 p.m. next Sunday for a new episode. I'm Callie Crossley. Thanks for listening.